So firstly, a census. How many people here actually say Merry Christmas when they do the Christmas wish, as opposed to Happy Christmas? How many say Merry Christmas? Put your hand up. Put them right up. I'm blind. Righto. How many say Happy Christmas? The Marys win it, hands down. They win it, hands down. That was to our Julie. The Marys win it, which is really interesting because Merry Christmas is actually associated with merriment, with behaviour that usually happened back in the 1600s around taverns, pubs. And so that's where we get the phrase, we make merry. We don't say we make happy. We are happy. So there's a difference between the Marys and the Happies in a technical sense. Happy is what I am feeling, and merry is what I am doing. It's interesting, for me at least, the only person in the room who probably thinks so, that when the Queen signs off her Christmas message, she always signs it off with Happy Christmas. And I know that you'll race home to listen to the Queen's Christmas message and see whether I'm right or wrong. I know you'll do that because you're so keen. So there's our census done, a bit easier than what it was in the time of Quirinius. But another question that I ask myself is, why would God want to become present as a man? I mean mankind, let alone being a man. Why would God want to do that? And you can ask yourself the same question, no matter how old you are. Why would God want to become like us? And the answer that we find to that question, if we find one, will really depend on what our understanding of the relationship is that we have with God. If our relationship with God is distant or so complicated, then we will probably find that we don't get a satisfactory answer to why would God want to go through all of this. If our relationship with God is closer, full of perhaps more mystery rather than defined answers, then you would probably find that we are contented with the mystery of not getting the answer, because once we remove the mystery, there's no point in having God, because we've solved everything. And perhaps that's where the answer lies, just to get you completely confused. God may have become like us so that we become like him. There is all the theology there about saving the world and remitting all of our sins and all of that technical stuff. But at the end of the day, when we look at why God would want to become man, it's got to do with a relationship. And once a year, we get to concentrate from our part, we get to concentrate on boosting that relationship. Your being here tonight, listening to the readings that we have, the ancient readings that we have, Isaiah, Paul writing to Titus about 30 years after Jesus died, and then St. Luke's Gospel written about 85 years afterwards. Listening to those ancient readings, as the early church did, we still immerse ourselves in the mystery of who God is. And some of us will go away tonight feeling much better because we're a little closer to God, and some of us will go away feeling more confused than ever. Because as we get older, it seems to me, as our innocence evaporates and common sense is supposed to come in and take over, it doesn't make a lot of sense why God would want to do this. Why would he want to present himself with all the woes and the heaviness that it is to be a human person? A lot of us would find it easier if that were not the case, if there was some magical answer that would say, take away all the dramas, take away all the bushfires in my life, and so that I live in utopia. Well, that's fantasy. And we're not going to live in a fantastic world, to stretch the word there. We're not going to do that, because we're going to live in a factual world. And because that's where our heritage comes from. And that's why God, perhaps, became a man, was so that we could identify with the fact. And the fact of the matter is that, as we have the evidence at Easter, the fact of the matter is Jesus started his life the same way that we did. Okay, most of you weren't born in mangers, I get that. Most of you probably weren't born from virgin mothers. I don't understand that. We can come back to that one. Most of you know who your earthly father is. Most of you went through the pains of going to school and then the pains of leaving school and the pains of starting work and then the pains of perhaps leaving work. Most of you know the joys of falling in love and the pains of falling out of love. The absolute exultation of having your heart bursting with pride and joy, and the absolute agony of having your heart ripped apart and broken. Most of you will have experienced those things. Once you identify who you are as a person, you start to identify why God would want to share this with you, why he would want to identify with us. He did not do this as magic. It was not fantastic. The fact of the matter is, he became one of us so that he could identify with us and we could identify with him. But we don't identify with him until we experience the resurrection. Until that point, he remains a little baby in a manger, or he remains a man on a cross. God becoming one of us only starts to make sense once we get the resurrection. Once we look in and see the empty tomb and the clothes rolled up on the side, and then realise it now makes sense. So Christmas for us is full of the joys, and for some of us it's full of absolute sorrows and hardship. And I think God gets that. I think he gets the fact that for a lot of us this is an awkward time, that we're mixed up with our understanding, we're mixed up with trying to practice or exercise our faith, we're mixed up with trying to love God and love our neighbour, and sometimes the two just don't come together at the right time. And perhaps that's why he was born in a manger. Just to add a little bit more theatre to it, there are angels flopping around the hills talking to shepherds, and then form a choir, and then start singing, and then bring them down to reinforce this God event. So God reveals himself as one of us, not to kings and queens, not to princes and people who are great in politics or anything. He reveals himself firstly to the lowest of the low, the shepherds, who were in one sense, as I've said here before, pretty much the criminal class. They would have always said Merry Christmas. They would never have said Happy Christmas. So whether we identify tonight or this Christmas with the shepherds, who were a lot of the times were the bad guys, or we identify with the angels, who were the good guys, find someone in this Christmas story to build a relationship with. Remove the fiction and immerse yourself in the fact that God became one of us so that we could become like him. And anything that gets in the way of that happening stops the angels from singing. So this Christmas, I ask that your ears and your hearts be filled with the voices of angels, that despite what's going on in your world, that you will be filled with a sense of peacefulness, a sense of real joy, and a sense that your relationship with God is okay. Might not be completely on track, but it's okay, and you're here, and you're working on it. And that is me. Merry Christmas.